Now then, let's start this morning with a story here in County Wicklow. And it's not just a story, it's a person and their experience. My first guest has bravely waved her right to anonymity and will share her story here this morning. Kenneth Tracy from Blessington was 15 years old in July 1987 when he began abusing four-year-old Pamela McLaughlin. The abuse continued for 4 years. Last week, Pamela faced her abuser in court and told him, "You took my childhood away from me." Yesterday, Kenneth Tracy received a 4-year suspended sentence. And Pamela is on the line to share her story. Morning, Pamela.
Morning, how are you?
Great. How do you feel this morning?
A sense of relief that it's finally over. It took such a long time. And also, of course, there is some disappointment in the sentence, although the sentence was not entirely unexpected. So I was pretty much 99% expecting that sentence.
Right. And what age are you now, if you don't mind me asking you?
I was actually 37 yesterday. Yesterday was my birthday.
Right. So it's taken a while, hasn't it?
Yeah. Surely has. So it's before the courts for 4 years, before the Irish courts for 4 years.
Yeah. Take us back. I mean, who was Kenneth Tracy to the 4-year-old Pamela McLaughlin?
So he was a neighbour, lived a couple of doors down from my family home, where I lived with my mother and father and my two sisters in Rockypool and Blessington. And my mother and his mother would have been really good friends. So my mother would have spent quite a bit of time down with his mother. And because I was the youngest, there was like 11 and 12 years between myself and my two older sisters. And so I would have went with my mum quite a bit down to the house. So that's when the abuse would have taken place.
Right. And as a 4-year-old, would you have known what was going on? As a 4-year-old, 5-year-old, 6-year-old, 7-year-old, you know, as the years went on?
I had no clue originally. All I knew was that I had in my victim impact statement as well. I've always remembered living with a constant feeling of like guilt and insecurity and nearly like a dirty feeling. I've known that from quite a young age. I just didn't know where it stemmed from. But as I got that bit older and I reached towards 7 and then my 8th birthday, that was when I realised, after hearing a radio advert about sexual abuse of children, I realised that was what was happening to me.
Right, you were very aware then. You knew there was something going wrong.
I knew
even at that age.
Yeah, I knew. I knew it was, well, one, the abuse was carried out in secret. He always knew to stop when someone was coming. And two, it just made me feel from the offset horrible. So I knew something was wrong. I was too young to put my finger on what. Obviously, I was still practically a baby.
Did you talk to anybody about it during that time?
No, I didn't during that time at all, up until just shortly after my First Holy Communion, and when I had heard the radio advert and I realised something was wrong, I did speak to my mother, although I, at such a young age, I still wasn't able to elaborate on what exactly was happening.
To verbalise it as such.
Yeah, exactly. And at the time, my mother recalls that he was actually standing in the window upstairs, exposing himself out the window to children, and she thought that that was what I was referring to at the time. So she simply said, you know, she knew there was something going on with him, but she didn't realise that I was actually being abused by him. She said, you know, she told me, you know, don't go down there, I won't bring you down there anymore, and you don't go down there on your own or anything, and I didn't, and that's how the abuse stopped. But, it's just unfortunate that at the time I wasn't able to verbalise it enough, that my mother could understand what was going on. As you said, it happened, the unfortunate kind of coincidence that he had actually been around the same time exposing himself upstairs from the landing window, and she had heard about that and thought that's what I was referring to.
Right, so in her mind, he was acting strangely and inappropriately, and he should stay away lest he, comes into your house as such.
Yeah, exactly.
But no knowledge of something already was and had happened.
No, unfortunately not. And then it took me a very long time to tell someone as a teenager and an adult. I told my then boyfriend, and I had told a couple of friends as well when I was a teenager. But obviously then I could explain it properly and I understood properly what had been going on, but I didn't as a child.
And then what was the next step with that?
So I got through school and everything was okay, although I did put a lot of pressure on myself, constantly needing to receive, like, you know, the best of grades. Couldn't, if I just passed something, it was never good enough. Always putting pressure on myself, and constant feeling of anxiety and stress. And it really came to the fore then in college. I was really stressed in college, but again, kept putting it down to, you know, I want this grade and I want that grade. And it was when I actually finished college in Carlow IT that I think I had a bit of time then finally to actually think. And that was the first time I had a proper kind of a mental breakdown, if you call it as such. I just couldn't get out of bed one day. All I could do was cry and cry and cry. And this went on for days and days and days. And eventually I went to the care doc and was diagnosed then with generalized anxiety disorder and major depression. And it was from then I was referred to counselling. So I started to go to counselling from the age of 23. I remember at the time being asked, did I want to, you know, my counsellor asked me, would I ever consider taking a case? And I was like, no. I couldn't even bring, at that time I couldn't say his name. I referred to him as a bad word, basically. I just wasn't, I wasn't able to say his name. So instead I just called him a curse word because I couldn't bring myself to say his name. So I wasn't able to bring myself to take a case. It didn't even enter my mind. But after a lot of counselling and a lot of work on myself, and finally being able to actually talk to people and talk to my family about it, then I finally was able to decide to proceed with a case.
Yeah, so you're on a journey to banish, basically.
Yeah.
So take us back to the other year, the intervening years between, say, being 8 or 9 and the teenage years, that gap. I mean, how did it affect your life and, say, your relationship with everybody out playing and, you know, having fun at that age?
That time in my life, I really, 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 really just wanted to push it into the back of my mind, and I really tried my best to forget that it ever happened. Like, I just tried to block everything out and tried to forget anything happened at all. But it often came to the forefront in that, like, there would be little things. If I got a smell, like, of a tent, for example, a tent would remind me of some of the abuse that I had suffered. If I saw someone in a Liverpool jersey, that would remind me of the abuse I had suffered. And I suppose I always felt kind of, even though I had quite a lot of friends growing up, and I still have quite a few very close friends, I at that time felt isolated, like I was different, like there was something different and I didn't really fit in. And I still sometimes suffer from that. Like, I could go to a party and I could be in great form and want to go to this party, and I could be at the party and just feel like lonely, like I'm the only person in the room and I want to go home. So I've been suffering from that for those years.
And that's still a legacy with you now, is it?
That's still a legacy. Now, it doesn't happen as often, and when it does, I'm often able to deal with it a lot better than I would have been. But that's taken years of counselling. But yeah, it's still a legacy. I think that's something I'm always going to probably have to live with, is feeling that little bit different and isolated.
And during your school years and your college years and wanting to do well, and that's striving for perfection, I suppose, in some way, or what? How do you explain it?
I feel like I kind of created these expectations of myself in that I wasn't going to let what happened to me define me. And by just going and kind of, you know, getting normal grades in school, like, you know, just kind of cruising through school and not putting too much pressure on myself, I didn't feel like that would have been good enough. I felt like I had to excel to prove to myself that I wasn't going to be, that basically I wasn't going to end up on the scrap heap because of what happened to me. And I think I put a lot of pressure on myself that way. And again, it's only in very recent years that I realised that I don't actually have to put that much pressure on myself.
And during those years, what did you think of yourself?
Not very much. Very low self-esteem, no matter how many times people would tell me I was good at something or I looked well, or I would never believe it. I would often think people were telling me things just to make me feel better about myself. Even with regards to, for example, one of my passions is singing, and I've done a good few gigs, especially in recent years, and always people would say to you after a gig, oh, that was a great gig, well done, and you're brilliant. But there'd be always something in the back of my head saying, they're just saying that I'm not really good. Like, it's that kind of legacy that you live with, I think, that stems from abuse.
You were distrustful then.
Yeah, distrustful.
And of even good intentions,
yeah. You just, like, because you feel like there's a party that's always just not good enough, a party that's tarnished and that isn't going to go away.
Have you been able to repair a lot of this?
Yeah, thankfully, but it's taken such a long time. Like, I think if you asked probably any of my immediate family, they would say they've watched me through very dark days, and like I still have the capacity to have those very dark days, but just thankfully there's a lot less of them. But it's just constantly going to counselling, just really working on myself, that I've been able to kind of overcome, and that I've been able to actually see, okay, that's my mind telling me that, but it's not actually true, you know, that I am good enough and I am enough. It's taken years of counselling, and as I said as well in my victim impact statement, my psychologists have told me that I'll probably be on antidepressants for the rest of my life. Like, it's not something I'm ever going to be able to kind of live my life without, and that in itself is a big thing for me. Like, it's like it feels like a life sentence. Like, I don't know what those antidepressants are doing to my body physically on a long-term basis, but I've had to take them since I was 23, and now I've been told I'm probably going to have to take them forever. It's just I've been left with that legacy. So, which makes kind of yesterday's sentence a little more even, I suppose, disappointing, because I've been left with a legacy, and it feels like he hasn't been left with anything.
Yeah, and you got to, just to remind our listeners, you received a 4 years suspended sentence.
Yes.
You said in court to Kenneth Tracy, you took my childhood away. What was the childhood he took? Was it the innocence and naivety?
Yeah, it was. Yes, 100%. And he took, like, some of my very first memories are of him and what he did to me. A lot of kids, their first memories are starting school or their first Holy Communion, or my very first memories are of him and feeling afraid and feeling horrible and feeling dirty, and like, they're my first memories. I can't ever go back and change that. That's just what I remember. So my childhood, as I would like to remember it, is not there.
When did you first confide in your mother?
Would have been after my first Holy Communion, so I was around 8, cause my birthday would have been my 8th birthday would have been in July after my first Holy Communion. So I was around 8, and that's when I said to her, as I said, I don't exactly remember the words I used, and whatever words I did use, she didn't take it up that I was being abused, but she did think, like, oh, like, he's after, you know, she probably seen him up in the window.
But when did it go that she understood that there was actually more to a potential from somebody who was acting strangely?
So not until I was had been in counselling for a couple of years. I'd say I was about 25 or 26.
Wow.
When I finally was able to speak to her properly about it. And even then, I still wasn't able to go into detail. It's only since I've actually come forward and brought my case through the courts that I've been able to speak to my mother in detail about what actually happened.
And would she have thought that you were a difficult teenager? And
No, in fact, quite the opposite. And I think that's probably because I was putting so much pressure on myself to, because I already felt such guilt and I felt so bad inside, that I went the opposite way. And instead of rebelling, I was like, okay, I'm going to be so good. I'm not going to do anything wrong. So she said, actually, I was a perfect teenager, apparently.
Right, okay. Because you were internalising everything yourself and
exactly,
and doing
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
So take us along the road then to the eventual conviction of Kenneth Tracy.
Yeah, so in Australia, I was living in Australia at the time. I lived there for about 6 years. And in 2015, I had thought about it for quite a while, that was I going to, you know, bring a case, was I not? And then it just literally wouldn't leave my mind. So I just walked into a police station in Sydney at the time and made my statement there, which eventually made its way home through Interpol and onto the desk of the Gardaí in Blessington. And then that would have been in around April 2015. And then in August 2015, I came home for a 3-week holiday and made my actual statement to the Irish police. And then that went to the DPP. So in, I think it was first in the court. I came home for good from Australia in December 2015. And the case was first heard in the courts in Ireland in March 2016. So it's taken literally from March 2016 up until yesterday to get the result that we got. So it's just adjournment after adjournment after adjournment. And constantly, like, there was, his solicitors were saying he's of low intelligence and they wanted a report and they were taking a long time to get the report. And it just, it's taken, like, that's one of the things about the system, like, it shouldn't have to take that long. I mean, in all, there was two reports, one that was given in November 2017, and one that was actually given in March 2020. So if his solicitors are to be believed, it took that length of time to get those two reports done, and that is the delay apparently in that case.
So what would you say to others?
I mean, I would still say to others, I will always say, come forward, because these predators, like, they thrive on silence. As it is, I mean, I know I am a victim, obviously, but I myself know of at least one other victim who has been in contact with me who unfortunately cannot bring herself to come forward. I would say to anyone out there who is suffering, please come forward. They thrive on silence. If we don't come forward, who knows how many other children are going to suffer at the hands of these people, because realistically they can't help themselves. I won't say that it's easy to get justice. I won't say that I even got the justice that I wanted, but I did get justice. Everybody knows who he is, everybody knows what he is, and hopefully because of that he never gets the chance to do that to anyone again. The courts, like, the justice system definitely needs to change, the court system more so than the justice system. Number one, there should be an advocate for victims. There isn't. There should be more services for victims. There's loads of services for the perpetrator and nothing for the victim. It shouldn't be allowed to go on as long as it went on. And but, like, as I said, despite all that, I still wouldn't change it. I would still come forward. I got my justice. Everybody knows what he is. I would have preferred that he spent some time in prison as a punishment. He's not going to, and I've accepted that. But still, please, if there's anybody listening, and if you're suffering in silence, it does get better. It can get better. Go to your counsellor, go to your doctor. It's hard, it's not easy, but just don't suffer in silence and don't suffer alone, because help is out there. As I said, justice system is not easy to get through, but you can get through it and you can get your justice. And in, as well as that, the best thing about it all is you're making sure that this doesn't happen to other people.
Yeah, and listen to children. So, into the future, Pamela, how is life?
Life is hectic going into the future. I've an amazing partner, Adrian, and a little 2-year-old boy, Rean, who keeps both on our toes. He's been up actually since 4:30 this morning, so he's kept myself and his daddy wide awake. So he's a handful. Hopefully, we were supposed to actually be getting married in December this year, but with the coronavirus, we've postponed it to December next year. So yeah, I'm happy. I'm relieved it's over. I actually finally feel like I've had closure, and I finally feel like I can move on. That is because I've come out and I've spoken about it. And I'd like to thank everybody for sharing my story, for being in contact with me, with their support. Everybody has been amazing. I'm overwhelmed by the outpouring of support. It's really been a massive help.
Well, just to one of the texts in here, I know what that lady means about smell. At 60, the smell still gets me. I can't talk in the air because my voice will be recognised.
There's so many little things that will constantly come up, little reminders. But you learn to live with them. They don't go away, but you learn to live with them. You learn how to cope with them. I totally understand what that listener is saying, the sense of smell, or just seeing a colour, seeing a jersey, there's so many things that can bring it up. The victim is always left with a life sentence, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you have a birthday around this time, I hear?
Yes, yesterday. Yeah. I was 37,
A good day? So,
it was a good
strange,
birthday present.
A strange day,
but a good birthday present to get, as in, you know, it's over. I can move on. My first birthday that I can actually put the whole thing behind me now and move forward.
Pamela, a pleasure to talk to you.
And you too,
delighted you're in the place you are now, even though some struggles ahead, but you know, you sound happy, and the future and the wedding and a solid partner and everything. So fantastic, Pamela. Thanks for talking to us this morning.
Thank you very much. Thanks a million.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
That's Pamela McLaughlin there from Blessington. It's The Morning Show at East Coast FM.